Hi, everyone. This is Achyut Dibabba from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. If you're in the United States and you're celebrating today, hope you guys are having a really great day. Today, we're going to take a look at three common misconceptions about the sign of Sagittarius. I figured it would be good to get back to this series since we haven't for a while, and maybe a good one to do on Thanksgiving when people might not want to take in, you know, heavier content about the astrological weather, just kind of live through a holiday and eat some food and take a nap, which is for me what Thanksgiving is all about. So at any rate, we're going to dive into that. I want to remind all of you guys, there are 37 days left in my annual Kickstarter, and we are at 325 backers as of today. So thank you to everybody who's pitched in. We have a long way to go. We're trying to reach 1,367 backers for our target backer goal this year. So we still have quite a ways to go. And when you pitch in and donate, I'm going to take you to the Kickstarter page right now. You can find the link to the Kickstarter in the description of this video, as well as in the comments section of this video. And I'm going to show you the Kickstarter page so you can take a look at it. When you get here and you scroll down, you will find that there are rewards. So when you donate and support this channel in 2022, you can pick up exclusive lectures, including a lecture where I take a deep dive into the astrology of 2022. You can learn mantra meditation. You can learn about the nodes of the moon, an exclusive lecture that I do. There's a year ahead horoscope reading for your sun or rising sign for the whole year. There are talks that I give on the traditional planets and the outer planets, a deep dive into the mystical side of those planets. Also, there's about 41 year ahead mini readings left. And these are where I actually look at your birth chart and record for you a little monologue about what I see as the biggest transit of your 2022 for your birth chart. Then also, and there's other readings too. And then finally, the best thing that I offer at this time of year for through the Kickstarter is 50% off tuition to all of my programs. You pledge $900, your normal early bird cost is $1,299. Full tuition is $1,800 for my year-long certification course. It is a program completely brimming with content, and it's a really great course. I have a lot of people that have gone through it. If you feel like learning astrology in the year ahead, it's 50% off. It's even $400 cheaper than the early bird rate, so it's a great savings. And if you bundle year one and year two, or year one, year two, and horary, or readings and passages, I have 4 one-year programs, and you can bundle 1, 2, 3, or 4 of them together, and you can use them anytime from 2022 onward, which means you don't have to take them all at once in 2022. You can use them as long as I'm offering the courses, and I will be offering them for the foreseeable future because I love these programs, and this is really the core of my creative work. I haven't poured myself into anything as much as I have the building of these courses to teach people astrology, professional astrology. So at any rate, you bundle them together, you save. I deeply appreciate your support and donation. This channel doesn't exist without you guys pitching in. This is about half of my day every day. Before you can know when you donate to this channel that you're donating to an astrologer that sits down and does, you know, mantra meditation for 90 minutes every morning and prepares by sitting and spending time with sacred texts from all over the world. And I really pour my heart and soul into the creation of this content. By the time it's written and recorded and then put out everywhere, it's about half of my workday, and I do it Monday through Fridays year round. So it doesn't work without you guys. If you are able to pitch in and support, help me get to 1,367 backers. I really do appreciate it. So all of that being said, let's start talking about Sagittarius and what makes this sign tick, and some misconceptions about the sign, as well as maybe some of the deeper essence of the sign. So in order to do that, I want to start by pulling up my astronomy program. By the way, my normal camera that I use is, I accidentally forgot to plug it into charge yesterday. So using my normal webcam. All right, I'm going to pull up this astronomy program and show you guys what Sagittarius space looks like in the sky. This is I've artificially made the daytime look like nighttime for the sake of explaining the concepts. But what we're looking at here in this picture is right about the date, right around late November, when the sun enters the portion of the zodiac known as Sagittarius. This is giving you a picture of the sidereal zodiac in this program. The tropical zodiac aligns the signs of the zodiac mathematically with the portions of the circle that are defined by the unmoving points of the equinoxes and solstices. So the constellations drift relative to those points. But in ancient astrology, there was quite a debate about which zodiac was correct, the mathematically defined zodiac according to the equinoxes and solstices, or the zodiac defined by the constellations, or their constellations alignment with the equinoxes and solstices. So at any rate, that's why you're seeing what looks like Libra and Scorpio right here. But actually, in the tropical zodiac, we consider this portion of the year from the last 30 days of the autumn season, prior to the winter solstice. We consider that to be Sagittarius season. Remember that this is an ideal and symbolic system, not a causal one, which is why it works in either hemisphere. So the idea of Sagittarius here is that Sagittarius represents the bottom third of the darkening of the light in the autumn. So if you take this celestial equator up here, this line, and that's going to be Libra. That's when the sun crosses that line going downward in the sky toward late September. That's the autumn equinox. And from the sun's journey downward to Capricorn, and from Capricorn back upward to that celestial equator, that represents the dark half of the year, where there is effectively more darkness than there is light in a 24-hour day. As we are descending into the darkness, we're going Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius. As we're rising up from within the darkness, we're going Capricorn, Aquarius, Pisces. So this half of the dark side of the year that Sagittarius falls on, I sometimes call the darkening of the dark, because you're talking about yin rising, basically. You're talking about yin dominance and yin rising. Whereas when you're talking about Capricorn going back up to the equinox point, which will then take us to the spring equinox, you're talking about the lightening of the dark. And so the yin is starting to diminish as light returns, but yin is still dominant. So there's a waxing and waning half of the year on the dark side, and there's a waxing and waning half of the light side too, because the same thing is happening on the other side of the zodiac. When you're going Aries through Gemini, the light is, it's on the light half of the year and light is rising. And then when you go Cancer through Virgo, it's still the light half of the year, but the light is now waning as darkness is slowly becoming more and more. So we're on the darkening of the dark half of the dark side of the year, if that makes sense. And what's happening in Sagittarius is we're reaching a critical turning point, the opposite of which in the zodiac is Gemini in the spring. This turning point takes the sun all the way down to the winter solstice. And then from that point, the sun starts moving back upward again. So Sagittarius was called a double-bodied sign. It is a double-bodied masculine fire sign, and it is the domicile or home temple of Jupiter. The other home temple of Jupiter, of course, was Pisces. That was Jupiter's feminine home, which is a double-bodied water sign that comes right before the light returns at the spring equinox. So Jupiter's signs are opposite Mercury's signs, and what the reason for that is that when we turn through the double-bodied signs of Mercury, in Gemini and Virgo, we are turning from light into darkness. For example, in Gemini, the transition that's being made is between the fixed sign of Taurus and the cardinal sign of Cancer, which comes ahead of it. So we're moving out of that dominance of light as light is rising to the turn that effectively starts diminishing the light in Cancer. So that turning point signals a change toward waning or toward darkness. Remember that one of the things that Mercury is most commonly associated with is constantly diving into the underworld. As an evening star, then dive into the underworld. Comes up as a morning star, then dive back into the underworld. So Mercury is also associated broadly with qualities that can, I guess, broadly be defined as deconstructive, whether it's skepticism or the rational mind that takes things apart. Mercury's gift is toward chaos, divine chaos, and taking things apart. And so when we turn into yin at the end of when Gemini, what does Gemini represent? It represents a sign that marks the transition from light into the start, the beginning of the darkening of light. So that's a Mercury signature. Same thing with Virgo. Virgo, Mercury's domicile and exaltation, comes at the end of summer. And at that time, what's happening? The darkness is about to take over. We're going into the underworld dark side of the year. So it's another transition where darkness is taking over. In Cancer, the darkness is just starting to return. In Virgo, it's about to fully take over. Both Mercury-ruled signs that represent the disorder or the tendency towards chaos. Chaos meaning the breakup of an established order. Generally speaking, the introduction of chaos is a part of life. It's not a bad thing, but it's part of a cycle. So when we get to Jupiter-ruled signs, what are we talking about? We're talking about the reestablishment of light. When we get to Sagittarius, we're talking about the transition that's being made around that time as the sun reaches sort of the basement of the solar year in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's starting to return and move upward. And so around that time, we're seeing light returning, just the beginning of light returning, opposite in Cancer. When we get to Pisces in the spring, we're seeing the same thing. We're seeing, just like Virgo, we're seeing the light is about to take over. So the light starts to return, the light takes over in Jupiter-ruled signs. And what does Jupiter signify? Jupiter signifies the return or the return of unity or the building of a whole or the need to make something inclusive and whole is the word that comes to mind. So something it's really important to understand all of this about Sagittarius. The most common misconceptions that I hear about Sagittarius, and I perhaps should have led with these, but these are the most common misconceptions that I hear that I want to address, and I want to address it based on this astronomy. So these, again, misconceptions usually just mean that it's like they're like stereotypes and people have these ideas that this is what the sign is all about. But really, if we understand what the sign is all about, there's a lot more there. So the one misconception is that Sagittarians love freedom. They're just freedom seeking. They can't commit. They just love freedom. Two is that Sagittarians are party animals. Oh, they just love to party and have fun. They don't take things very seriously. They love freedom. They like to have fun and party. And finally, you'll hear things like they're into religion and travel. Okay, so they're into higher minded things and travel. And usually that's a conflation with Sagittarius in the ninth house. Okay, so there are elements of these sort of stereotypes that are definitely true. There is a sense in which the Sagittarians in my life, including my own daughter, likes freedom, likes an environment where there's a party or there's a sense of like joy and fun and spontaneity. And sure, Sagittarians can be very wise, a Jupiter ruled sign. Jupiter is associated with religion. So you can see some of these are, they're not untrue, but they really don't get at the essence of the sign. So first of all, I'm going to talk a little bit about, just use an example that I've used many times before. There's one of my favorite, movies from my childhood was Top Gun. I don't know if you guys ever saw Top Gun, but I used to love that movie. And Maverick, who's played by Tom Cruise, in many ways has a real Sagittarian, sort of stereotypical Sagittarian quality. He's a Maverick. You know, he does things his own way. He doesn't like rules, loves freedom. He likes to have fun. He's cocky. He's talented, but you're reckless. That's one of the lines in the movie, you're reckless. And some of these traits fit the, you know, the Sagittarian archetype. Maverick, however, has a kind of change of character after his friend, his wingman, Goose, dies in the story. And also as a relationship enters his life that he might want to become more serious about. So relationship and commitment enter his life and a friend dies. And he has to, in a sense, grow up, and he has to turn some kind of existential corner where there are suddenly things of great value that are worth fighting for or that are worth getting serious about. And this is often the arc of a Sagittarian story or a Sagittarian season in life or a Sagittarius sun or moon or rising sign. I'll tell you another story. There's always movies like this where the hero, let's say it's a heroine, is very promising, but very troubled. You know, they're like, I always tell the story in my classes. Imagine the opening scene of a movie where the girl is, you know, laying on the floor and she's, you know, passed out. She's been partying. She's still in her party clothes or whatever. And there's, you see some, the camera shows you that there's booze everywhere and maybe some coke on the mirror or something. You know what I mean? Like they're in the bathroom. So in this scene, you get, and then it flashes and it shows you a Harvard Law degree on the wall. So you immediately get the feeling, oh, this person is talented, but squandering their talent, right? They're one of those really talented people that also has like a real problem with rules or limits, or they think they're above rules or limits because they're so talented or something like that. Then they're going into work. They're probably, you know, probably about to quit or be fired, or they're hanging by a thread. You know, they've got people looking at them going like, you're talented, but you're reckless. And then someone walks into the office, and let's say it's a woman who has a jerky husband who's trying to take the kids away in some kind of custody battle. And so this attorney, then she has something to fight for. Suddenly she has to pick herself up off the floor, pull herself together because there's some kind of higher cause or purpose. So a lot of the times what you see with Sagittarius is a straddling between these kinds of nihilistic qualities and redemptive qualities. And why would that be? Because you're talking about the deepest and wildest, most untamed qualities of darkness or yin, turning by the end of the sign toward yang. And there's both are divine qualities, don't get me wrong. But that one of the ways that story tends to go is the drive toward chaos, the darkness, nihilism, recklessness, etc., and then some turn toward the light, some turn toward purpose or ambition or responsibility. Remember the next sign that comes along is Capricorn, of course, the one that slowly brings back the light by climbing up the mountain methodically. So Sagittarius will often embody, this is why they're called double-bodied signs, because they'll embody dual qualities at the same time because of the transition that's happening between light and darkness. So when you think, like, I think one of the greatest examples in cinema of Sagittarian archetypes come from Woody Allen movies. Woody Allen himself, bunch of Sagittarius energy. And when he's talked about his movies, he's always talked about his internal struggle between nihilism, reckless self-indulgence, fear and anxiety about the future, and redemption and hope. And so in many of his movies, and the one that comes to mind right away that I had to watch in a film class when I was in college, it's a little bit before my time really, but was Annie Hall. And in that film, you know, he's paired next to this sort of much more redemptive, bubbly, upbeat, positive character. And I think it was Diane Keaton that played it. But, and aside from whether you like Woody Allen or not, because, you know, a lot of stuff out there about Woody Allen. People have very strong feelings about him. But his movies often, like, he's described himself as anhedonic, I think it's called, unable to experience pleasure, difficulty experiencing pleasure. And so there's always that feeling in Woody Allen movies where he's, and he always says, I'm just playing myself, you know, I'm playing how I really am. So the dichotomy between the kind of nihilistic side and the redemptive side of things, and knowing that Sagittarians are holding that tension, can help us understand some of these misconceptions. For example, when we say Sagittarians love freedom, what do we mean by that? Well, in part, what we mean is that there's going to be a tension between, you know, responsibility and responsibility, necessity, Saturnine words. They tend to confine us, restrain us, commit us. They give us a sense that, well, I can do some things, but I can't do others because I'm obligated in a certain way. And Sagittarians, it's not that they can't be responsible, it's that they're going to feel the tension between the need for freedom and necessity or responsibility more acutely. And a lot of us have responsibilities in our lives that aren't really important. How much is there of the letter of the law in this world compared to the spirit of the law, you know? So Sagittarians are also acutely aware of the hypocrisy, you know, of people enforcing rules and responsibilities and so forth that they find void of meaning, void of real meaning. And that's part of the tension. So it's not just, oh, Sagittarians love freedom. Sometimes it's more like, well, Sagittarians are looking for the spirit of the law as opposed to the letter of the law. Sagittarians are looking for something that's worth committing to, that's redemptive. Otherwise, there can be a tendency towards a kind of rebelliousness or a tendency to reject things that say you ought to or should or have to do this or that. And that's because inherent in the time of year is the tension between that depth of yin, which is more wild and untamed and or chaotic or even reckless, and the sense of dutifulness and virtue and redemptiveness that the yang qualities point to, right? So, for example, we can also see this very clearly in the constellation image of Sagittarius. The centaur is a creature in Greek mythology, and just by its very physical appearance, that blends the qualities of the wildness of the animal body, the freedom of the horse, with the rational, heightened sense of responsibility, control, rationality that comes with the human form. And we know that the human form is also unique because of its inherent tension, of the inherent tension or struggle between our animal qualities and our rational qualities. We're pretty unique in that respect. So the Sagittarians, nihilism and order. And Zeus himself is a god that is the great keeper of cosmic harmony, the one who blesses us with law and order, a sense that the cosmos is held in harmony. Right? That's Jupiter, law, courts, religion, education, the sense that everything is held together in a meaningful whole societally. These are Jupiterian qualities. But we know that Zeus is also a philanderer, jealous, vengeful, basically Zeus loses his shit from time to time and is not always a trustworthy character. And the tension between, you know, piety and the animal body, between rationality and instinct, these tensions are apparent in Sagittarius as much as nihilism and the sense of void and these things being empty or hollow, which is like, well, fine. Then, you know, what's the hedonistic mantra? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we will die. And there's this sense of, what's the point, you know? But then on the other hand, you have anything that redeems, that gives purpose. So all of these tensions, and I'm not trying to moralize here, because the animal body and the wild chaotic qualities of yin are divine. But how do we hold them rather than getting driven by them? For example, in Greek mythology, the centaurs are, you know, they like to crash parties and they like to get drunk and they like to start stuff. You know, they like to get into fights. They are, you know, in that sense, very unpredictable and erratic, and they don't care what they disrupt, or, you know what I mean? So on the other hand, you have creatures like Chiron, who's the sage, represents the sage, the one who has learned the art of war and battle, medicine and the stars. So similarly, if you ever read the Narnia Chronicles, which you guys know I love to talk about, the centaurs play the astrologers in C.S. Lewis's Narnia, but they also play those who lead the battles. So there's something wild and passionate and physical about Sagittarius, but there's also something that's very elevated and rational. And the tension between those two things is why we say, oh, they love freedom. No, so they're working with the tension between freedom and responsibility, voidism and redeeming, hedonism and some kind of integration of the instinctual body with the rational mind, right? So these are the tensions. When we say that they're party animals, you know, they just love to have fun. Well, there's a tension between the need for fun and freedom and things that have higher purpose and meaning. And there tends to be a rejection of things that have higher purpose or meaning that only run by the letter of the law and that don't have some true spirit in them. There's inconsistencies. There's explorations of hypocrisy. These are things that run deep into the Zeus symbolism, the centaur symbolism. We say that they're into religion and traveling. Most of that comes from a conflation of the sign of Sagittarius with the ninth house, because Sagittarius is the ninth sign. In modern astrology, people tended to think, before they had access to traditional source texts, they tended to think that the signs had the same meaning as the houses in order. They do not. Houses have an entirely separate rationale as to why their topics are what they are, that are not about the conflation with the signs. So Sagittarius does not necessarily have anything to do with religion, does not necessarily have anything to do with travel. But insofar as travel might be related to exploration and freedom or pilgrimage, or insofar as religion is related to something that's teaching us to control our instinctual body or bring it into right relationship with the higher qualities of mind, so that we're not just, you know, hedonistic drunkards crashing parties and getting into fights our whole lives, right? Like those tensions may have something to do with religion, but not necessarily either. So what I would keep in mind when trying to understand Sagittarius is that Sagittarians can't throw out the deep yin, the deep darkness, maybe the most difficult of which expresses itself in terms of, you know, the reckless, the void, the hedonistic, the sense of nihilism, the sense of nothing means anything, I do what I want, you know, it's all hollow and empty. And then on the other hand, these kind of ennobled qualities, there's something to fight for, there's something higher, there's some need to live a life with some kind of sacred purpose or calling, with virtue, with a way of refining our instinctual bodies so that they are not just tearing the place apart. You know what I mean? So those are the tensions inherent in Sagittarius. That's where almost every stereotype that you've ever heard of comes from. It comes from those archetypal tensions and the way that they boil and express themselves. So you can have a little bit more nuanced understanding of the sign, hopefully. Well, thank you guys for listening to this. If you are a Sagittarius, I would love to hear, you know, what other misconceptions have you heard about Sagittarius, or what is it like for you to be a Sagittarius? I'd love to hear your story. If you're a sun Sagittarius, moon Sagittarius, rising Sag, it would be wonderful to hear your guys' thoughts as well. And before I go, remember, we are 325 backers today, trying to get to 1,367 with 37 days. Was it 37 days left? I think it's 37 days left. 36 days left to go now, it's saying on my Kickstarter. So if you're able to pitch in and support, pick up a reading, pick up a course for half off. I'd love to study with you guys. If you like this kind of stuff, come and sit into a little crock pot of astrological transformation for a year with me and my staff, and let's get after it. In the meantime, I'm so thankful for all of you, and I hope that those of you who are celebrating Thanksgiving today have a really wonderful day, that you're able to cherish what you have, that you're most grateful for. You know, this is a day for me that I can't get on the story of Thanksgiving historically as much, but I take it as a day it's really just about being thankful. Being thankful for my friends, my family, my life, my health, my kids, astrology, all of you guys. So, you know, it's a day to be thankful that we also live in a country where we can explore, you know, we can explore things openly, intellectually, spiritually, religiously. I think that's one of the things that I remain deeply thankful for about the country that I live in, is that there's at least some semblance of that. It's not a perfect country with a perfect history at all, obviously, but I always just take a moment to realize that there's many times in history, different spaces where, you know, lots of different people weren't allowed to talk about astrology every day as openly as I do. And I'm always deeply thankful for that. It's a really special topic that we're able to get together and talk about. So anyway, that's just a little reflection I wanted to share with you guys. I hope you have a good one. And tomorrow we will be previewing Jupiter into Pisces, the last preview of December's major astrology that I'm doing. So we'll be taking a look at that tomorrow. And I probably will pop on to do some live readings as well, taking a look at some charts. So hit the notification bell and you get a notification when I'm streaming live. All right, that's what I've got. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.